All right, 3, 2, 1, and we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tea Hatch Podcast, where we have open and in-depth conversations about the things that you and I care about. Today on the Tea Hatch Podcast, I'm going to be talking about something I haven't talked about in a good while. And that's just some good old-fashioned basketball. Obviously, I did an episode about the potential NBA restart, some thoughts on that. At this point, it looks pretty clear that the restart is on, that it's going to happen. There have been a lot of reports of positive COVID-19 tests from quite a few NBA players of teams that are planning on returning, but that doesn't appear to be slowing down the potential NBA restart, so it looks like it's going to happen. So at this point, I just want to talk some basketball for a little bit. I've got some other episodes of the podcast that I am doing some research on. I had one that wanted to get out today, but it's going to need some extra research before that's ready to go in the way that I want it to. So today we're going to talk about basketball. So what I want to do is break down my thoughts on each of these teams that is going into this NBA restart and really talk about their actual potential as far as actually contending in this NBA restart. So I want to talk from the perspective of course, you know, who's going to be contending for a championship and who I think now is not, and also who I think is going to be competing for that Western Conference 8-seed spot, since there are so many teams gunning for that spot with the potential play-in game being an option for them. So I think it's going to be very interesting. I do have some notes here of players that are unfortunately no longer with their team due to COVID-19, but that's only going to be a small piece that aids the process here. But essentially, going in alphabetical order from Eastern Conference here, going to go on to the Western Conference later, looking at the Boston Celtics. Now, Boston's an interesting team to me. They have been all year. I think really the biggest thing with Boston is the emergence of Jason Tatum as a true star in the NBA. He looks like if he continues to get even better than he is now, he could hit that superstar level of guy. And what we saw from Jason Tatum toward the end of the year, or toward the end of what would be the 2019-2020 NBA season, Jason Tatum was playing amazing, amazing basketball. He was the number one scorer on the Boston Celtics. The guy could do everything on the court. He is a true three-level scorer, and I think he has some playmaking chops to go along with that as well. So we'll see how that playmaking element of Tatum's game develops as he continues through his career. But if you look at what he's able to do scoring the basketball, as well as what he's able to do on the defensive end, his impact is massive. So in my opinion, Jason Tatum does appear to be a true number one type guy moving forward, and you really just have to put the team in around him. So when you look at the rest of Boston's roster, it's a pretty good looking roster. I mean, this is a team that we've been talking about for years that has had so much talent and has never been able to really put it together. Obviously, we saw those teams, or that team led by Kyrie, wasn't really getting it done. The chemistry wasn't there. Tatum wasn't the guy that he is, and Jaylen Brown was not the guy that he is today. But you look at this Boston roster now with Kemba Walker, with Jaylen Brown next to Jason Tatum. You still have Gordon Hayward on that roster. While yes, he is not what he was in Utah, he is still a really good player who is contributing and will help contribute toward Boston Celtic wins moving forward. So the only question about this Boston team has been their ability to deal with size, particularly on the defensive end. However, what I've seen from Daniel Theis when he gets minutes at the center position with the other starters on this team, they are a really, really good team, very tough to beat. And not only does Theis make them good defensively, he is also an amazing pick and roll pairing with Jason Tatum. So I actually see the Boston Celtics as one of the teams in the East that does have a chance to actually get out of the East and contend in a real way. Now, if they end up going against a team like the Lakers or the Clippers in the finals, that's going to be a really tough matchup because you're essentially pitting Jason Tatum as the best player on your team against LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard, two guys who are vying for the crown of best player in the league, one guy in LeBron vying for greatest of all time, at least in that argument. So at that point, it's a tough road to see how Boston wins that series. However, if a guy like Kemba Walker is going off, if Jaylen Brown is turning into a offensive threat that we maybe don't see him to be right now, they could truly contend for a championship. So I think, you know, despite all the circumstances, I think the Celtics still stand as a true contender. Now, gonna pretty much glance by this next one, the Brooklyn Nets, because it's pretty much the same story now as it has been all year, which is this is not their year. They're still waiting for Kevin Durant. They're still waiting for Kyrie Irving to return from injury. I believe at this point we've heard that both of those players are not going to be returning for the tournament and the bubble in Orlando. So you can pretty much count them out from a contention perspective because they are missing their best two players. But the Nets have also been decimated as of late. So Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan have both tested positive for coronavirus. They had Wilson Chandler opt out of the restart, so he's not going to be playing. They did sign a couple guys to try and make up for that. They signed Justin Anderson as well as Tyler Johnson. Both those guys are really, I honestly doubt either of those guys are going to see minutes in games, and if they are, I feel bad for Nets fans. The other thing to note here is that Nicholas Claxton had shoulder surgery, so he is out for the rest of the season and will not be here for the restart. Now, that's not a huge impact to that team. However, he is a good young player who's making strides, so it would have been nice to get him in a more competitive environment, like the playoffs, and let him get some minutes there, but it's not going to be a huge thing for the Nets. So moving on to the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers have been an interesting team all year. The problem for them, obviously, has been that Victor Oladipo has been out, has not been healthy. And now we find out that they have lost Malcolm Brogdon. He has tested positive for coronavirus. So at this point, is Malcolm Brogdon going to be able to get back by the time the restart happens? That's really the big question for this Pacers team. I've been very impressed with what I saw from Malcolm Brogdon, just truly being a go-to scorer, the number one playmaker on the team, and really the engine that was making the Pacers go offensively. So losing him would be a huge blow to the Pacers, and at that point I wouldn't see them as a contender in any type of way. As it is right now, they're maybe, if you look at it through the rosiest colored glasses, if you will, maybe you could see a scenario in which they make the Eastern Conference Finals, but I don't really see that happening, and I don't see them getting past there, even if they did get there, even if they did have Brogdon. So it is a good young team. I like a lot of the guys on this roster and enjoy their style of basketball, but I just don't think it's a competitive team this year as far as winning a championship goes. Now, moving on to the Miami Heat. So reports are that they have lost Derek Jones Jr. to a positive coronavirus test. Now, Derek Jones Jr., not a huge piece of what Miami does, so I don't think they're going to miss him a ton. Obviously, though, when you're, you know, losing an athletic wing who can play defense, who can get out there and just soak up some minutes against these gigantic, skilled NBA forwards, it is nice to have those guys, and of course you would like to have him there, but if he's not, they're probably not missing much. That said, like at the start of the season, don't really see Miami as a contender. However, I do see the Heat as a team that could have a good playoff run here and could be just one of those teams that is super exciting to watch. Every series that they're in, every game that they're playing is going to be one that is hotly contested. They play such an interesting brand of basketball, the way they are able to integrate guys like Bam Adebayo into the playmaking of their offense. A lot of what they do with dribble handoffs is very unique compared to the rest of the league. So definitely recommend tuning into those Miami Heat games. I just don't think with Jimmy Butler being your number one guy and not really having a bona fide second star, I just don't think that's a team that's going to be able to compete all the way with the shortfalls that Jimmy Butler has in his game. And that said, I absolutely love Jimmy Butler's game because he is a guy that at least at moderate levels can score on all three levels. And of course, we know what Jimmy Butler can do defensively. He is amazing on that side of the court, always brings the energy and the heart. So no shade on Jimmy Butler here, but I think you guys likely agree with me in thinking that he's probably not the kind of guy who can solely by himself carry a team to a championship. So moving on to the Milwaukee Bucks. This is one of my favorite teams as far as winning the championship. And of course, saying that, that's not, you get no points there. That's pretty obvious. Best team of the regular season. Giannis looks like he's coasting to another MVP. I have loved watching this Bucks team this year because they are really a great example for a lot of basic defensive principles, things like what protecting the paint can do for the rest of your defense. You know, instead of focusing on running guys off of the three-point line at every single chance that another team gets for three, instead they're sometimes okay giving up a subpar three if that means that they can then prevent the layup inside. And that's paid huge dividends for their defense all year. And Giannis has just been unconscious amazing this year. What this guy does on a basketball court cannot be understated. The sheer dominance of Giannis out there, and to add to that, the statistical dominance that he is also producing at the exact same time while playing a lot less minutes than other NBA stars right now, it's been pretty interesting to watch. You know, a lot has been made about load management, guys taking games off. Well, Giannis doesn't take any games off, but he still gets to manage that load by blowing out the other team so bad that when it gets down to the fourth quarter, it just makes more sense to not put Giannis in the game and just let the rest of your team finish the game out because you have such a big lead. That's what has been a lot of the time this year for the Bucks. So I think with what they'll be able to put together with that awesome defense, with Giannis's dominance, it's really just going to come down to the supporting cast that is around Giannis. Chris Middleton, I do believe in Chris Middleton. He is a three-level scorer. However, is he the type of guy who is able to purely create his own bucket in spite of great defense? I have questions about that, and I would suspect a lot of you do too. He's not much as far as a playmaking perspective. While he can make passes within the offense, he's not going to break a team down off the dribble, create an opening, and take advantage of that opening all in one. At least he's not going to be able to do that a lot. So you start to ask, if Giannis is having any type of tough night, who are you really handing the ball to and getting great production? I can't trust a guy like Eric Bledsoe. I have my questions about what Chris Middleton's going to be able to do in that situation. However, all that said, Giannis is just so dominant, so skilled, so physical and athletic that I can see a lot of teams having trouble stopping Giannis. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Giannis reacts to the defenses that get thrown at him in the playoffs this year. Obviously, last year we saw a lot of teams taking up the strategy of walling off the paint with multiple guys. And against Toronto, that ended up taking a huge toll on Giannis and his ability to get to the rim and in turn be able to open up shots for his teammates. So it's going to be interesting to see what Giannis can do against that this year in the playoffs. He has been seeing a lot of similar looks in the regular season. However, I think there's going to be some significant differences between the defense that a team is able to prepare for one regular season game versus what a coach is going to be able to prepare for his team for an entire seven-game series. So we'll see how Giannis reacts. We'll see if he continues the legacy and, you know, moves forward on a trajectory that could see him as one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time, if things work out the right way. So I'm very interested to see that come to fruition. So next, gonna move on to, I mean, it's the Orlando Magic. It's meh. Am I wrong for thinking that? I just don't see what this Magic team is going to do aside from probably get swept. So I'm not really looking forward to them this year. I guess if I'm going to tune into some Magic games, I could be keeping an eye on Markelle Fultz. I can keep an eye on Jonathan Isaac. Those are two prospects that do genuinely get me excited when I watch them play and make good plays. But other than watching the game for those guys and maybe Mo Bamba if he actually gets minutes, I'm not really tuning into any Orlando Magic games. And of course, you don't need me to tell you that they're not a competitive team. So next, I want to move on to the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that at times I have been quite critical of, and at other times I have heaped praise. It seems like with the 76ers, I'm always kind of halfway between wrong and right, and I just watch this team play basketball, and every single guy on the court looks confused about what he should be doing. And I think for a team that has been under the same coach in Brett Brown for so long, with the same core players in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons for so long, you would think by now they would be able to figure out some type of way to get these guys to play together in a way that creates good basketball, creates scoring opportunities, and creates some at least competent spacing on the floor. Yet what we've seen throughout this entire season, doesn't matter if you've got lineups with Al Horford or Tobias Harris, you know, Josh Richardson, doesn't really matter who you're shuffling in and out of these lineups, when you have Embiid and Simmons on the floor at the same time, you're not getting optimal value out of either of those players, and they are amazing players. What Joel Embiid has been able to do at the center position with his level of skill is just, it's amazing. Ben Simmons, I mean, what can't he do on the basketball floor except for shoot, obviously, but I just don't see it working out with these guys on the floor at the same time, which we all know when you watch NBA playoffs, what it comes down to is what team is able to essentially out-execute the other team with your best five guys on the floor. You'll end up with teams who that looks like a small ball team, like the Warriors. You'll end up with teams like maybe Milwaukee, who will end up putting very big lineups in the game. Philadelphia is going to end up with a very big lineup in the game. It's probably going to look like Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, and Joel Embiid on the floor at the same time. And if I have those five guys on the floor, what are they doing to take advantage of Ben Simmons and his skills and to take full advantage of Joel Embiid and his skills? Because if your look is going to be what it's been all regular season, which is to throw Ben Simmons to stand around in the paint, and sure, he can do some good things, cutting across the lane, making some cuts, catches, layups, rebounds, But when you're sticking Ben Simmons in the dunker spot and you have to take Joel Embiid out to the three-point line, you are putting Joel Embiid in the least efficient spot on the floor for him, which makes absolutely no sense to me. Joel Embiid is your superstar. So if Ben Simmons is the guy who has a lack in a particular skill that would let you take full advantage of Joel Embiid, well, at that point, you got to say, sorry, Ben, you're the guy who's getting kicked off the floor. You're the guy who's got to do something that he's not comfortable with because we have to take advantage of how great Joel Embiid is. Well, for year after year after year after year, we've seen that Brett Brown is not willing to do that. And we've also seen that the front office in Philadelphia is not willing to trade one of these guys. So I think it's going to be what we've seen in the past couple years and what we probably will see for years to come is that they're just not going to be that good when it gets down to the key moments because they can't leverage the best out of their best players at the same time. So unfortunate there, but that's what it's going to be. Now on to one of my favorite teams, really just to watch this entire NBA season, but also as a team that I think could, in a certain reality, come out of the East, and that is the Toronto Raptors. Absolutely love, like I have almost a love affair with watching Nick Nurse's coaching. It is, oh my goodness, the things he is able to do with that team, taking full advantage of the skills that each of their players have on the offensive end, and what they do defensively, all of their principles, playing on a string, you know, these are always, no matter what personnel they have out on the floor, these are always five guys who are on the same page mentally, and it's just amazing to watch them work as a well-oiled machine as opposed to a circus, which some other NBA teams look like on defense, trying to close out to shooters and recover to the paint. Whereas with Toronto, one, they're scout heavy on defense, and two, they know exactly what they're going to do whenever anything goes wrong. They know who's supposed to cover for you, who's supposed to cover for him, so on and so forth. So I absolutely love watching this team, especially watching how Pascal Siakam has been able to blossom into an NBA star. I was really impressed with what he did in the playoffs last year, but he has taken massive strides over the offseason and over the course of this regular season to where he is a legitimate number one scoring option. I do see in a lot of ways, but not as many as I would love for a true superstar, but in a lot of ways, Pascal Siakam is a three-level scorer. He can hit three-pointers in multiple spots on the floor. He can score in the mid-range, whether it's off the dribble or off the spot-up, working on a pick game, short roll, whatever it may be. He can also score down low, whether it's driving the rim, like I was saying in those off-the-dribble situations, or he can actually back guys down. I mean, let's think about last year in the playoffs where he was backing down Draymond Green and scoring on him like it was easy. So I am very excited to see what Pascal Siakam does this year, being the number one guy on Toronto. And I'm just excited to see him continue to blossom into a greater and greater star. And the best thing to me about watching that happen with Pascal Siakam is just his mindset. He's got the right mindset for a guy who's going to grow and grow and grow and get better every single year, no matter what, because he believes to his very core that he knows better than anybody else what he's capable of, and he's not going to let a damn person get in the way between him and his goals, what he knows he can be, what he knows he can accomplish. Any guy I see with that kind of mindset is definitely going to have success now and moving forward. So definitely keep your eyes on Pascal Siakam and the Raptors during this return. Next, moving on to the Washington Wizards. So with these guys, a couple things to note here. Davis Bertans, he is going to be sitting out the restart, likely because he is going to be a free agent at the end of this year, and he probably does not want to risk an injury heading into free agency that could cost him a lot of money. So, you know, some guys have to make decisions based on money, and that's fine. The Wizards did rule out John Wall from returning for the NBA restart, so they're not going to have Wall. So they're going to look like the Wizards from all of this year, where Bradley Beal is going to go out, do some amazing heroics. You know, he's going to look like an absolute stud, but it's not going to matter in the end because they're the Wizards. They just do not have the team around Bradley Beal to actually contend in any kind of real way. I don't really see them winning a playoff series. They'll win some games as we're going through some of these regular season games that still need to be played, but they're not going to do much in the playoffs, and I think we all knew that coming into this season and coming into this restart. So, no, not breaking any new ground there. So that does it for the Eastern Conference there. I'm going to grab a quick sip of water, and we'll get on to the West here. So with the Western Conference, the first team on the list here is the Dallas Mavericks. Looking at this, Willie Cauley-Stein has opted out of the restart. Looks like Dallas did sign Trey Burke. I believe that's Trey Burke. I'll have to double check. and then they are going to be missing, I believe that's Damian Lee. I may be wrong. Is missing the start of team workouts, so that's looks like a calf injury, so maybe they'll have him back. Seems like they might by go time, but not going to be a huge deal anyway. with Dallas, you know, this year, this is one of my favorite teams to watch play basketball, and I know I continue to keep saying that phrase, but it's so true when it comes to the Mavericks and just the style of basketball that they're able to play with Luka Doncic at the helm, with the help of Kristaps Porzingis being able to pour it in from three as well as get to the rim. Very athletic. People just always underestimate the athleticism of Kristaps Porzingis. He is a guy who can move from that three-point line to the rim in what seems like 0 seconds flat when he really is motivated or has the ball, has an open lane. Depending on the situation, he can really flash that athleticism and do something special. So I love watching this Mavericks team. They, for a really long stretch of the regular season, were not just the best-rated offense in the NBA, but the best-rated offense in NBA history. So this is a really, really good offense. However, on the defensive end, they've definitely had their fair share of struggles. That's really going to be their big weak point when it comes to contending in the West. Are they going to be able to defend guys like Anthony Davis, LeBron James for an entire 7-game series? Are they going to be able to defend Kawhi and Paul George for a 7-game series? I have some serious doubts about what they're going to be able to do on the defensive end of the floor to have an answer for so many of these high-powered offenses in the Western Conference. It's going to be a real struggle for the Mavericks. So this year in the playoffs, what do I expect from the Mavericks? It is possible they could win a playoff series. Do I think they're going to contend for a championship? No, I do not. Now, I think with Dallas, we're going to see really a great example of how important defense is to winning championships. Because clearly this is an amazing offense, historical as far as their production. But it's really going to come down to, are they going to be able to outscore how bad their defense is? And that issue gets a lot tougher in the playoffs when every single possession matters so much. You have to squeeze as much value as you can out of them, which they do on the offensive floor or offensive side of the floor, very efficient. But on the defensive side of the floor, are you going to let, you know, a couple slip by that other teams wouldn't, which end up being the difference at the end of the game? I think that's going to be really key for them this year and something to watch as we see them play. Now, moving on to the Denver Nuggets. And oh boy, you have probably read the headline by now that Nikola Jokic has tested positive for coronavirus. I believe their coach, Mike Malone, has also tested positive for coronavirus. Yikes. I just feel bad for Denver fans if Jokic is not able to return in time for this NBA restart, because I was getting so absolutely off my mind excited to see what this new version of Nikola Jokic looks like. For so long, people have been calling him Doughboy, you know, all these other things. He was definitely a bit of a chunky guy by NBA standards, but he was amazing in spite of that. What is Nikola Jokic going to be able to do when he can move like a guy like Kristaps Porzingis? I mean, he looked that darn skinny. It's just crazy. So to think a guy with his skill on the basketball floor, his ability to pass, I have not seen a passer like Nikola Jokic since, I mean, maybe Magic Johnson. That's the type of passing skill that we're talking about here. He can throw outlet passes full court length with perfect accuracy. He's constantly doing no-look passes. I believe he does that for every pass to throw off the defense. And yet he's still threading dimes all over the court. Doesn't matter if it's a bounce pass, a lob, through a tight window, quick one, slow roll. Doesn't matter. He's mastered all of them. And he can see every opening manifest before the defense can. And if it wasn't for the chemistry that he has with his teammates, before his teammates could. But thank goodness they have been together for such a long time there in Denver, where they can actually take full advantage of Jokic's passing ability. So it would be very sad for Denver fans and for NBA fans as a whole if Jokic can't play. Obviously, that would take them out of any type of contention if Jokic is not there. I do like Jamal Murray as a number two guy. I think he still has some strides to take before he is a bona fide number two that you'd be happy to say, hey, this is our second best guy. With him and Jokic, we're going to go gunning for a championship. There's still some growth that needs to be made there. And of course, filling out the rest of the roster. But I think if Jokic returns, if Jamal Murray can be himself and not have any of those off nights, and if we saw a emergence of Michael Porter Jr., which, you know, what does that look like? Does an emergence look like 10 points? Does it look like 20 points per game? To me, if he can score in the 10 to 15 point range consistently every night for this Denver team, that on top of Jokic and Murray and the strides they've been able to make on the defensive end of the floor, I'd actually be pretty scared of this Denver team. Now, when you compare them to the LA teams, are they actually a championship contender coming out of the West? I don't believe so. I think if they get to the Western Conference Finals, if they were able to, they would find a immovable object there to stop what is, at this point, still a stoppable force. So I just don't think they would be able to beat the tandem of AD and LeBron. I don't think they would be able to beat that Paul George, Kawhi Leonard tandem, because at that point, who's guarding those guys? Are we talking about Will Barton and Michael Porter Jr. trying to guard Kawhi and Paul George? Good luck with that one. So I don't necessarily see Denver as a contender here, but if Jokic is playing, I'm going to be watching a lot of Denver games in this NBA restart. So moving on to the Houston Rockets, a team which I have talked about on this podcast a lot, and I'm actually happy I get the chance to talk about them here because I haven't really done a full checkup since they went full small ball, traded for Robert Covington, and fully embraced the small ball movement. We've seen a decent sample size, however, it's still pretty damn small. However, you know, obviously considering the circumstances, it's the best we could get. And we've seen up and down play with these guys. They have, through this new small ball lineup, been able to bring the best out of Russell Westbrook that maybe that we've ever seen. Aside from that MVP year, that is, but I just don't believe that this is a team that can contend in the playoffs. So obviously they're outsized. They are going to get out rebounded now in the regular season. Depending on the game, depending on when you tuned in, you could see them string together quite a few good possessions, box guys out, get rebounds. And you could see stretches throughout the season where, hey, you know, they're rebounding as a top 15, top 10 NBA team on rebounds right now, but it's not sustainable. We saw toward the end of the season, or, you know, in the games leading up to the stoppage, let's say, where they really just were not able to get it done on the interior, whether it was defensively or rebounding the basketball. And so I think it just leaves a team that has essentially a gaping hole right in the middle, just open, ready for anybody to take advantage of their lack of size throughout the rest or throughout a playoff series, that is. So while it is interesting watching this very unique offense, it's not something we've really seen fully embraced in the NBA at this large of a level, where they just essentially say, yeah, we're not going to roster a center. We just want to play all small guys. But I just don't think PJ Tucker is going to get it done at the five spot for them for an entire playoff run, getting through a team like the Lakers that have Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard. You know, even the Clippers have Montrezl Harrell, who will be, you know, just dominant as far as what he's able to do with his size versus a small team like the Rockets. Kawhi obviously gets to the rim, jams over the top of fools all the time. What's he going to do against a team that their tallest guy that hits the rotation, I believe it's 6'8"? So they're going to have a tough time trying to defend the Lakers, the Clippers. Imagine if they go up against the Nuggets. My goodness, what would Jokic do against that Rockets team? So, well, I think it's an interesting team. It's an interesting watch. It's an interesting idea to go all in on small ball. I don't think it's a winning formula. So that pretty much summarizes my thoughts there. Next, on to the Los Angeles Clippers, who just added Joakim Noah to the roster. Probably not going to get much in the way of minutes unless they have some injury troubles there in LA. But with the Clippers, if they've got Lou Williams there to go along with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, this is a scary basketball team. Now, the problem with the Clippers to me is we still have yet to see lots of minutes be logged with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the floor at the same time. We have even less minutes logged with both of those guys and Lou Williams on the floor all at the same time. So while they have a lot of amazing weapons, while they have a lot of guys who are going to be able to put the ball in the hoop, I don't know exactly how great they're going to be at their very top end. I think when you've got a team with the roster that they do, and I think they've, you know, really looking around the league, they've probably got the most complete roster around the league. Their floor is very high. You know, they're not going to be knocked out early, in my opinion. Obviously, barring injury, but that's the same for any of these teams. So the real question to me is, how good does it look when all of these guys get on the same page, and will they be able to get on the same page? I think if they are able to get on the same page toward the later rounds of the playoffs, they're going to be a scary juggernaut type team that you're just not going to be able to take out unless it's, you know, maybe LA Western Conference Finals, where you have just these two juggernaut teams going back and forth, trading wins in a seven-game series that would be super exciting. So if you're looking at the West, if you're looking for championship contenders, the Clippers have to be one of them. No matter what detractors you can point to, they still have to be a championship contender, and that's definitely what I believe they are. Next, moving on to the other LA team, the Lakers. Now, they did just sign J.R. Smith, and they will be missing Avery Bradley for the restart as he has opted out. A questionable move, in my opinion, signing J.R. Smith. I am so perplexed by this move and the fact that LeBron James was the one lobbying for this move, of all guys, to ask for J.R. Smith to sign with their team. LeBron James? if I'm not mistaken, I think it was game one of the NBA Finals. I forget what year it was with LeBron in Cleveland. And J.R. just grabs a rebound. There's a couple seconds left on the clock. And instead of putting a shot back up that could have got them the win, or at least the tie, I forget exactly, he just goes and dribbles toward half court, dribbles out the clock. And LeBron's just sitting there like, what the fuck did you just do? Like, what the hell? And to think that LeBron would ask for J.R. Smith to be on the team just blows my mind. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you would ask for J.R. versus other guys. I'm not sure if Darren Collison is still sitting out there and looking for a team, but if I needed a guard on my roster and I had the choice between Collison or J.R. Smith, I'd take Collison personally, because I know he's not going to dribble out the last few seconds of a game when my team is down. Just, I can't believe it. But that stuff aside, because let's face it, Avery Bradley and J.R. Smith are both just role players on this Lakers team. You've got LeBron James playing really, really good now. He is not exactly the guy that he was at his prime, but what player at his age is. But what LeBron has done is he has fully transformed into that point guard role. Now, I'm not one of these, you know, people who's going to go around, oh, LeBron James this year learned how to play the point guard position. No, he's been playing point guard his entire life. He's always had the ball in his hands. He's always been the guy who uses his great passing vision and his accuracy. You know, he's great at both. To really pick apart defenses by using his gravity to collapse the defense around him and find the opening himself. He has been amazing at that his entire career. So the notion that just this year he learned how to play point guard, kind of dumb to me, but I do think what we've seen this year is he's fully embraced being point guard first, scorer second, which I think at various times in his career, he was scorer first, sometimes he was tied. Now he's playmaker first, scorer second. And I think that's a good fit on this Lakers team, where you do have Anthony Davis, arguably the best player that LeBron James has ever played with. So really, just with those two guys, it's going to be very difficult to take down this Lakers team. Put on top of that they have such an amazing defense this year. They've put together some pretty good schemes. They're pretty good as far as following, you know, basic defensive principles on their closeouts. But the thing that's been a real difference maker for them is having guys like Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, and Dwight Howard on the back end, ready to block any shot. Anybody that comes in toward the rim is in danger of getting blocked by this Lakers team, so that's going to really limit what a lot of other teams are able to run against them. So that said, they are now missing their best perimeter defender in Avery Bradley. Replacing him with J.R. Smith is like replacing him with a bullfighter, Ole. So I question how many minutes J.R. Smith is actually going to play versus a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. If you're a Lakers fan, you would be hoping that neither of those guys are getting a lot of minutes, but that's the situation you're in. So I think with this Lakers team, it's not necessarily a question of how good are they when they're at their best. It is how good is that best now? How much can they approximate that best Lakers team while missing a key defender on that team? Personally, I don't think they're going to miss Avery Bradley enough to make it a huge deal with this Lakers team. So I do see them most likely getting to the Western Conference Finals, battling it out with the Clippers, and they are most certainly a contender to win the title if they end up getting past the Clippers. So really in the West, look toward the Clippers and the Lakers to be your primary contenders. And honestly, there's not really anyone else that I see in the Western Conference that would be able to put together a run and actually get to the finals, let alone win the finals. So that covers the Lakers. excuse me. Now I'm going to be talking about the Memphis Grizzlies, there we go, who are currently sitting in the eighth seed in the Western Conference. And I absolutely love this Grizzlies team. They have one of my favorite NBA players in Ja Morant. I think the combination of Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. as your two guys moving forward is pretty formidable for the future. I think what they're going to be able to build around these two guys is going to be amazing. That said, this is not a year they're contending for a championship, but we all knew that. The real question is, are they going to be able to hold on to that eighth seed against teams like the New Orleans Pelicans and the Portland Trail Blazers, who will be hot on their tail? It really, really depends with this Grizzlies team if they're able to maintain their full team into this NBA restart. As it stands right now, they do have all their guys ready to play. So really, when you've got the combination of Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Brandon Clark, the other guy I'm thinking of, when they get those three guys going, this is a tough team, and they can go on runs that other teams just don't have in them. You know, they explode for 15, 20 points to, you know, an opponent's six. So they can really take over their teams in those little runs. The question is, with such a young team in tougher environments, you know, how are they going to hold up to the big boy teams, really, with teams like the Lakers and the Clippers? Are they going to be able to withstand the runs that they're able to put on, what they're able to do punishing that Grizzlies defense? I have my questions there, especially, you know, just imagining a one seed Lakers versus eight seed Grizzlies matchup. That's going to be really tough for the Grizzlies, because Anthony Davis is just going to cause such problems for Jaren Jackson Jr. on the inside. He's already a guy that struggles with foul trouble and just getting fouls way too quickly. So you put him against Anthony Davis, I mean, there's a chance that Jaren Jackson Jr. could foul out in two or three quarters if he's going against Anthony Davis. So, tough to say. Now, are they going to hold on to that eighth seed? I believe so. I think they're going to be able to outlast teams like the Pelicans and the Blazers. They do already have a step up on them. They do only have to win one game in a play-in tournament versus having to win two, because they are currently the eighth seed. Obviously, barring that they lose all their remaining regular season games, which I don't see happening. So I do think the Grizzlies will be able to hold on to that eight seed. However, if we do end up in a situation where Portland plays their way into that playoff spot, boy, you get Dame, CJ, and Nurkic all on the floor, all playing well. Gosh, good luck against that Blazers team. Because, I mean, Dame time is insane time. It's just crazy what Dame is able to do in the clutch. You get him in a play-in tournament where he's got two elimination games that he has to win to get his team into the playoffs. I don't even want to think about what Damian Lillard would do to those poor Grizzlies with that on the line. That would be some prime NBA basketball. Let's cross our fingers and hope that happens. Moving on to another team that is going to be contending for that eight seed in the New Orleans Pelicans. We're hearing reports that three Pelicans players have tested positive for coronavirus. However, David Griffin will not reveal their identities. So at this point, we don't know who they are. They could be three guys at the end of the bench, or it could be Zion, Brandon Ingram, and Drew Holiday. We have no clue. So at this point, if the Pelicans have their best players on the floor, you know, let's just say, for sake of argument, that they're going to have their full team into this restart, do I see them being able to compete for that eight seed? I see with this Pelicans team that they will get close to that point, but not quite. I don't think it's their year. I don't think they're ready to compete at that level and to truly you know, get into the nitty-gritty of playoff basketball. I don't think Zion is anywhere close to polished enough to handle the rigors of really, really tough NBA defense. Now, Zion, he is amazing. He's an awesome talent. He is able to take advantage of so many mismatches that he creates, not only with his skill, but with his body, his athleticism, his size. He is such a unique player. Combined with his skill, his ability to hit threes on occasion, his ability to playmake for the rest of his teammates, his ability to see rebounds coming that nobody else does and find new inventive ways to get them. It's amazing. I love watching Zion play basketball, but is he the type of guy who can step up and be a number one, number two scorer on a team that guts out a tough race to get into the playoffs? I don't know about that. Then you look at Brandon Ingram. Is he good enough to be a number one scorer on a team that guts out tough victories and elimination games? I question that as well, especially now that Zion Williamson is on the floor and these driving lanes are starting to close up for Brandon Ingram. It's getting a lot tougher for him to score the same baskets, or at least the same type of baskets, that he was getting earlier in the season. I think with the clamp down of defense, how tough it's going to be. Knowing that these games are so important, it's going to be tough to see. So personally, I don't see the Pelicans getting to that point. However, looking to the future for the next couple of years, I am definitely going to be watching a lot of Pelicans games because I am very excited to see what this young core is able to grow into, but probably not this year. Next, on to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm going to take this time to talk about one of my favorite prospects, let's say, to become a star in the NBA, and that is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Absolutely love big play Shai. Awesome defensive guard, and what he's been able to do on the offensive end. He's really been OKC's best offensive player. Now, yes, Chris Paul is the guy who runs the offense most of the time. Yes, Chris Paul is the guy who can score from all three levels, although really only two levels because a guy his size has a lot of trouble scoring inside. But I look at a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's got a large frame for a point guard. He is a lanky guy. Quick, fast, he's able to score at all three levels, he's able to play make, he's able to play defense. This is a guy who I just see that can do everything on the floor. And he's a guy that appears to have the work ethic, at least from everything I've been able to surmise, that seems like the type of guy who's going to add skills, add traits to his game every single year and get better and better and better. So I am very excited to see what Shai becomes in the future. For this current OKC team, you're looking at a Chris Paul, Steven Adams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander team. That just doesn't cut it in the Western Conference right now as far as gutting out tough wins in the playoffs. I don't necessarily see it, but that's just me. On to the Phoenix Suns. I mean, they're the Phoenix Suns. Do we expect them to contend for anything? No. They did sign former lottery pick Cameron Payne. He's not going to do much, never has. Then this is the big blow for me. Kelly Oubre Jr. out with a torn meniscus. Yeah, without Kelly Oubre Jr., you know, you're depending on Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton to be your guys. I'm definitely not depending on DeAndre Ayton to come through when I need him because he's a pretty inconsistent guy. Now, his numbers have looked pretty good this year, but that inconsistency just kills, especially going into the playoffs, trying to gut out tough wins. I just don't see this team doing much in this NBA restart. That's kind of how I feel with Ayton long-term as well. Just, I don't really see what the best version of Ayton looks like that makes me say, oh, that's a number one pick. That's a guy who I can, you know, use as a cornerstone of my franchise. Even at his best, I don't necessarily see that. especially when you consider his deficiencies on the defensive end of the floor. Do I think he's as bad as a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns? Maybe not as bad as Karl-Anthony Towns on the defensive end, but pretty dang bad. So, I'm not feeling it with the Suns this year as far as anything competitive. And as you can tell, I'm not feeling anything with them long term. They're going to continue to be the Suns. Suns going to sun. So that's that. The Trailblazers. The Portland Trailblazers. So they are going to be missing Trevor Ariza for this NBA restart. Is that a huge deal? Not really. However, this is a team that has struggled with depth at the wings, so that is something to consider. Not 100% sure on the status of Rodney Hood. I don't know if I'm just creating in my mind that he might be injured, but definitely check into that there to be sure. If they do have him, I do know they have Nurkic coming back. They are going to have both McCollum and Damian Lillard here to play, obviously assuming that they still want to play in the restart, which all indications are that they do. But I really, really do like this Blazers team, but on the other side, I can see a lot of the pitfalls that won't let them be a competitive contending team. Absolutely love Damian Lillard and his game, the way he plays basketball, the confidence in which he just imbues upon the entire game. You know, he can absolutely take over an entire playoff game. He can take over a quarter. He can take over a moment. He can get it done in the clutch. Dame is amazing. But then there's the other side where if you trap him properly on the defensive end, you're going to negate most of the great things that Damian Lillard does. Now, if you're one of those teams that thinks, oh yeah, we're just going to run out there, trap Damian Lillard, boom, we'll wipe the Blazers away, no problem. Good luck with that, because you need to know exactly what you're doing and execute perfectly if you are actually going to trap Damian Lillard to a point where he has to get rid of the ball and can't get it to an open player. It takes a lot of work. So the consequences for any team that does that improperly, oh my goodness, if you try and trap Dame and you don't actually successfully get a trap that forces the ball out of his hands, he will take advantage of you in so many different ways. If he's able to get a window open where he can fire a pass to an open shooter, boom, Dame can do it. If he can get around that trap and get an opening for three, doesn't matter how deep it is, boom, Dame's firing. Most of the time he's hitting. So you got to come correct if you're going to beat the Blazers. But if you come correct, you can beat the Blazers. So I do see a reality in which they could contend for that 8 seed, but they're going to have to play really good. Nurkic is going to have to shake off a lot of rust real fast if he's going to have the impact that he needs to have to get them to that point. So we'll have to wait and see what Portland ends up becoming in this restart, but I am excited for that. The Sacramento Kings, Jabari Parker, Alex Len, and Buddy Hield have all tested positive for coronavirus. So, I mean, you're not missing Jabari a whole lot. However, for a team like the Kings, he was actually getting some minutes and doing some production. Alex Len, pretty much the same story there. Buddy Hield, you will definitely miss. He is, I don't necessarily want to say premier scorer at the shooting guard position, but he is a very, very good scorer at the shooting guard position. He is one of those guys who can score at all three levels. However, he does need some help to be able to penetrate all the way to the rim and make that happen at a consistent basis. But he can do that. So you will miss Buddy Hield for sure. And that leaves the Sacramento offense down to De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley. And while I do absolutely love both of those guys as prospects, I don't see them doing much this year in this NBA restart. That's just what it is. Sorry, Sacramento fans, but I think most NBA fans would agree with that assessment of it. So I'm going to keep it short with the Kings. on to the San Antonio Spurs. Big thing for them is they are going to be missing LaMarcus Aldridge, who had shoulder surgery, so he won't play in the restart. This is a team that wasn't going to do anything anyway, and without Aldridge, they're definitely not doing anything. My opinion with this team has been for a while that they need to move on from LaMarcus Aldridge, from DeMar DeRozan, and actually get some real assets to have a true rebuild and build back to a contending team. They've opted not to do that. DeMar DeRozan could be walking in free agency. We'll see what happens, but I don't see anything good coming for Spurs fans in this NBA restart or in the near future. So, sorry, but that's what it is. And finally, talking about my favorite team, the Utah Jazz. And I'm actually not feeling great about my Jazz. We're losing Bogey, Bojan Bogdanovic. He had wrist surgery, and he's going to be out for the rest of the season, so he's not there. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, are they fine with each other? Are they not? Do they get along? Do they not? Are these just rumors and stories? Are they not? I don't know, and that's one of the most concerning things. So we're not sure if our two best players are on the same page, and maybe they are, but maybe they're not. And on top of that, you've got Mike Conley, who is supposed to be a star, but he hasn't been all year. And while he has looked better toward the end of the season, he still didn't look great. And this team still doesn't look great if you have, you know, Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley playing even at their best, let's say. Even at that point, with those two guys as your main scorers and your other option being either Rudy Gobert or Joe Ingles, however you want to look at it, yeah, I'm going to be realistic. Even as a Jazz fan, that's not a team that's contending for anything. Now, if, imagine the scenario that Bojan Bogdanovic was not getting or did not have that wrist surgery and was able to play, if Mike Conley was the Memphis Mike Conley that we knew him to be, and you had Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert playing at their best, that is a scary team to think about what you'd be able to do creating offense with Mitchell, Bogdanovic, and Conley. That would be pretty tough to compete with, especially considering how good the Jazz are in the defensive end of the floor. But without Bogdanovic, without Conley playing at his best, there's no way. There's just no way they're going to be competitive. Is there a chance that they could gut out a tough playoff series? Yes. But unfortunately, as a Jazz fan, I'm kind of looking at this restart as a potential, you know, one and done, where we only get to see that first playoff series and then, boom, we're knocked out and that's it. Which would suck as a Jazz fan, because this year was the year that the Jazz, you know, had that great offseason for Utah, brought in Bogdanovic, brought in Mike Conley, and it was supposed to be the team that could actually compete, that could actually contend, that could not just win one playoff series, but could win two, maybe three. But now, it's going to be a struggle to win one. So, sucks for me and other Jazz fans, but I think that's most likely the reality of what this NBA restart is going to be for the Jazz. That said, that really sums up my thoughts on all of the teams that will be returning to the NBA in this restart. To kind of summarize my thoughts there, I do think when it comes to the 8th seed in the West, Grizzlies are likely to maintain it. However, I could see the Portland Trail Blazers making a push for it. When it comes to contending teams out West, I really see it as the Lakers and the Clippers. Probably no one else as far as contending for a championship. On the Eastern Conference side, I think things open up a little bit. I do see Boston as a true contender. I do see, of course, Milwaukee as a true contender. And I do believe that the Toronto Raptors are a contender. Now, what happens to the Celtics or the Raptors when they go up against the Lakers or the Clippers? They probably get steamrolled pretty bad, but we'll have to see what happens. I am super, super excited for the NBA to come back. This has been a refreshing podcast just to talk about something that's, purely about fun. Get your mind off of, the world and what's going on here in 2020, especially in the United States. It's been a rough year so far. And it would be great to see some great basketball to cheer us up a little bit and make us just give us one, little semblance of what life used to be like. But all that said, I've got a lot more content in the pipeline for you guys. I'm excited. I've been doing a lot of research. I am hyped up about a lot of different things right now. So I'm excited to just keep making content for you guys and bringing that to you as often as possible. So with that said, if you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, if you enjoy the show in general and want to help me grow this into something bigger and better, the absolute best way to do so is to simply share this with your friends. So share this, leave a like, subscribe, comment. I want to hear what you have to say. And with all that out the way, enjoy the rest of your day. Peace.